I'm Carol Hills, and this is The World. We humans love our meat. Sure, the number of vegetarians is growing, but in general, we're eating more meat than ever. And that's not so good for the planet. Livestock production creates perhaps a fifth of the world's global warming pollution. And the demand curve for meat is only going up. But what if we could have our meat minus the livestock? In the last part of our series, What's for Lunch? About food and climate change, John Miller takes us to the Netherlands, which is cooking up a buffet of meat alternatives.
Stop number one on my alt-meat tour is the cafeteria of Maastricht University Medical School in the southern Netherlands. I'm here to meet Mark Post, head of the physiology department.
I will take a hamburger.
Post is an expert on how human heart tissue grows and heals, but lately he's been thinking a lot about burgers.
What makes a good hamburger, in your opinion?
Well, it should taste like meat and not like something that looks and sort of could be meat. In my mind, that's the best hamburger.
To Post, most hamburgers are in the sort of could-be-meat category. That's one reason it's taken him 5 years to produce one that's good enough to serve in public. Produce it in his laboratory, that is.
So the lab is just a regular cell culture lab. It's pretty boring.
A technician is hunched over a counter, squirting tiny daubs of gel into a plastic box. Next, he'll attach a bovine muscle cell to each one, taken from a cow killed at a slaughterhouse. With proper care, the cells will grow into muscle fibers. It'll take 20,000 of these to create the world's first cultured beef hamburger.
It's not rocket science, but it's cell culture at a scale that very few people have ever done before, and tissue engineering at a scale that definitely nobody has done before.
At this point, it's also expensive and inefficient, and it relies on large quantities of growth medium derived from slaughtered animals, which kind of defeats the purpose. But with the enormous impact that livestock have on the environment, Post thinks the stakes are too high not to try to get it right.
If we can come up with a very efficient way of producing a product that is indistinguishable from the real thing and that has a guaranteed quality, I think there will be a huge demand for it.
Finding that way will cost money. To attract funding, Post needs to prove that the whole no-cow meat idea has legs. He promised to cook and eat a lab-grown burger in public last fall, but he missed his deadline. Now the event is scheduled for August 5th.
We could set this field back 10 or 20 years if we fail to come across to the public and to the media as a credible alternative for meat production. That's the risk you're running.
3 hours north, another Dutch scientist shows me his idea of the meat of the future. Not in a laboratory, but in a humid walk-in climate chamber stacked floor to ceiling with boxes of crickets.
Insects turn out to be an excellent alternative.
Entomologist Marcel Dieke says insect meat and cow meat are virtually the same when it comes to nutrition. But to produce a pound of beef, you need about 20 pounds of feed. For insects, it's less than 2 pounds.
So with the same amount of feed, you can produce much, much more in terms of proteins. But not in this crazy way in which we're producing regular meat now, with all the burden for our planet.
The hurdle, of course, is the gross-out factor. Dieke likes his bugs straight up, the way folks do in Asia and Africa and Latin America, but Europeans and Americans tend to prefer them less conspicuous. So he's looking at disguising them by pounding them into flour or mixing them into processed meat. It seems to work. In a taste test at Wageningen University, where Dieke teaches, students rated meatballs made with 30% mealworms higher than ones made with 100% beef. The night after my meeting with Dieke, I have dinner with my friends Martin and Minka. My house gift is a little tub of mealworms I picked up at a local health food shop. Minka proposes to add them to a stir fry.
And I propose that we don't incorporate the mealworms in a way that makes it impossible to eat the dish without the mealworms.
No. I make two separate dishes. Oh. One with and one without the mealworms. Yes.
The mealworms are golden brown, just under an inch long, thinner than spaghetti. When the food is ready, Martin opens a bottle of wine.
a good, crisp white wine from Italy. Really the perfect complement for a mealworm, I think.
I'm actually going to leave the next part out. Let's just say I didn't really enjoy the mealworms. They were like little fat packets, but I can definitely see how they'd mix well with other stuff, and I've been assured that locusts and crickets are delicious. The last stop on my alt-meat tour is, of all places, a butcher shop in The Hague, about an hour's train ride to the west. White tiles, big refrigerators, blackboards advertising beef and pork and chicken and fish.
We just built the old-fashioned butcher store, and the only difference is that there are no animals involved.
Nico Kofferman is co-owner of The Vegetarian Butcher, which uses cutting-edge food science technology to make disconcertingly realistic fake meat out of wheat and beans and other plants. It's been a big success since it opened 2 years ago. You can buy the products in hundreds of outlets now, and they're looking to franchise in other countries.
Taste chicken first.
I try the faux chicken satay and spicy tuna salad, and, of course, a hamburger.
You can make 8 of these burgers for one McDonald's beef burger.
I haven't eaten beef since I was a teenager, but it seems pretty authentic to me. Kofferman says it's the taste of the future.
It's very old-fashioned to put plant-based proteins into an animal to lose 90% of the nutritional value and just to keep 10% of it. If you would like to feed the world, we can feed 30 billion people if we feed them plant-based. So that's the solution.
The Netherlands is far ahead of most countries in planning for climate change, maybe because 2/3 of the population lives below sea level. But when it comes to meat alternatives, there could be other reasons, too. Vegetarian butcher Nico Kofferman was recently elected to the Dutch Senate as the first ever representative of what bills itself as the fastest growing party in the country, the Party for the Animals. For the World, I'm John Miller, The Hague.
Our What's for Lunch series is part of Food for 9 Billion, a project of Homelands Productions and the Center for Investigative Reporting, in partnership with PBS NewsHour and American Public Media's Marketplace. So how about a delicious mealworm sauté? Or perhaps some bean-derived ground beef? John Miller sent us some great pictures from the Netherlands. You can see them all and hear our entire What's for Lunch series at theworld.org/whatsforlunch. And we wanted to thank all of you for the What's for Lunch photos you've submitted over the past few months. We've received over 130 submissions for our Instagram challenge. You can see our favorites online. And be sure to add your photo of how climate change is changing your menu by adding the hashtag What's for Lunch. That's What's, the number 4, Lunch. By the way, that Dutch physiologist who's been promising to cook up the world's first test tube burger looks like he's going to make his most recent self-imposed deadline. Mark Post is scheduled to cook and serve his first cultured beef burger on Monday in London. If you happen to be in the neighborhood, the event will be open to the public. Just follow your nose. Or you can watch live online from the comfort of your own kitchen. We've got details on that at theworld.org.